only have been sitting here and in fact I was wondering my own. Everybody's boycotting, I was wondering. Me as a chair, I think this is a whole staff and members in the department that I like to. When members also joined me, we were also having redirected. So my sincere apologies for having to move from one day to the other. We were moved here also. It looks like there is a confusion that is a significant about why we were moved from one day to the other. That our staff has got something to answer for in that regard. We are very embarrassed to send the department also from here to post, also to the media and to ourselves. We really don't like to hear them. So, we are not very happy that somebody changes our meeting time from 9 to 9:30. It is standard practice that on Fridays and many other days, committees of parliament start at 9 o'clock in the morning. Who has the audacity to say our meeting comes at 9:30? We don't know. We have a written notice that is 9 o'clock, which is the usual time. Late last night, I was called last Friday with a chair to be informed by a strange voice, strange person that I don't know. Tell me that the meeting is 9:30 and not 9 o'clock. So that's another matter that we'd like to discuss with the Office of the Secretary of Parliament. I don't take kindly to this thing. The committee has complained for more than a year about administrative matters, and the reason I called you here is that it's going to record this problem. I would have further meetings with you on my own, on which I will outline everything to you and give you a whole history of this and inefficiencies on the part of the staff that portray us as inefficient as parliament and as a committee, and I think this must come to an end. I have written correspondence that I wrote to the Secretary of Parliament 18 months ago to complain about the same problem of inefficiency. And I think this time around we want to do that. So, having said that, having apologized, hoping that my apologies are accepted by all, Khadija, if you have any question in your apologies, otherwise I will excuse you. And then just to say that I wanted this to form official record of our meeting. That we complained and we want this to be put to an end. We don't like to be sent from every day when we should meet. Find a notice at the door. We don't find the practice of the staff has informed us seriously that the venue will change and that now it's not only the venue, it is also now the time for meetings and many other things in our work, which is not necessarily there today, but I will outline in Monday and Wednesday. So if you have any question you may ask me, this will form part of our official record of today's meeting. The administrative problem in the initiative. And the last thing, the first thing is that we expect staff to teach them to check the venue, to check the facilities and the equipment. There's no way that you can always members arrive and or guests arrive before the staff arrive. They should be there to welcome guests. They should be there to test the if they were anything they discovered a long time ago, like they would still be there for them. So if you have a question, you may ask it, otherwise we are keen to release you and to start our meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Just on the point of the complaint and the group, and we will be starting this today, but I would also ask you to have a question on the
group. I will mark. My secretary will communicate with you the time I would advise that you should check your email around 2014 and then to content first of your email.
Just before the official from the office of the secretary leaves, I think it's important that as members we just advance one advice in terms of professional way of working. Much as whoever is subordinated to whose authority, I think the best part of doing anything is the preparatory part. What you are suspect of is there's no monitoring mechanism. I mean, in my office, we have PCOs. But I can tell you, at 9 o'clock, whilst I'm here, I'm expecting my office to be open because the community is there expecting to be serviced. We see a weak point even from the institution. Because the recurring decimal, it's not only the case with this committee, and I'm sure members, without lamenting, that if there would be a monetary mechanism on a day before, that, you know, the simplest tool of championing your office work, chairperson, a diary. If your secretary cannot update your diary in terms of the first thing to be done the following day, to be confirmed the day before, that's a problem. Because even the issue practically of checking whether those in attendance the day before, and I'm saying generally to the whole parliament. So I would advise really that you look into that mechanism, not only in this committee, that it's always, you'll find members running up and down in this institution, not knowing, and we have elderly people. We have people with disabilities here. So the issue of also a venue. We were trained whilst we were young in terms of office work that you would even go and test whether the tools, the instruments you are going to use are functional a day before. So I'm just urging the person that you don't forget when you meet to deal with these issues. The system really might be on paper functional, but we also see a problem in terms of how performance is measured on a daily basis, so that when a weakness is picked up, it is being corrected. It can maybe be the problem be in the system, or it can be the problem of capacity, that is occupational deficiency, or a political will, which all these warrant different approaches. Thank you.
All administrative rules. Mr. Shuru, will you allow me to put a rider to your addition that the issue of supervision, that management should supervise your staff? It cannot be a member of parliament be dealing with the staff on this matter. Mm. It should not happen that you should be sitting here wasting a good time of discussion and of everybody talking to the Secretary of Parliament office on administrative managerial and supervision issues. So thank you very much. On this note, I will close it and I will allow you to go. Looking forward to meeting you on Monday, and I will expect a civil response from the Secretary of Parliament. I know next week you will be done. Within 10 working days, I will expect a response, not a letter, an action response in terms of the issues you are raising. And a communique to all committees that you come to be saying this is the cancer of the people. Thank you very much. Sorry, but on the team, the department is here. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Zoga. I must also now come to the positive things that we are able to do, not only ask on the negative things that are sent this morning. Zoga is very able to communicate 10 years ago, and I saw already on my, I don't know if you saw in your email system on the website saying it was, I saw already the record of the previous minute. I was even in country on Monday, electronically, and I saw already by Monday afternoon, the students order your communication between the department and yourself. It's a concerning. So it's quite exciting. She does have the staff does have some policy if I want to emphasize. So I started the week looking forward to receiving the department having confirmation that she is coming, and knowing that because of that we are going to possibly close this matter today here. I also spoke to the proposal Mrs. Gachi yesterday, and informing her out of courtesy that the department will be here, and that we are likely to say yay or nay today, because I want us to put the things with your assistance and advice. We will be at the end of today say whether we are agreeing with the proposal for us, or whether we should say no to it, or whether we should just do an addendum of recommendation, which is some way, maybe a way to not say yes, not saying no, but making a recommendation. And, but I will be honest with the committee, I've applied my mind very seriously, very deeply, and I've gone through the historic record of what brought about the termination of certain acts, the socio-economic reasons behind that, and I have done a very in-depth, not only checking the records, but not only soul searching, you know, applied my mind because I must leave you as professor. I would submit, even before the government opens the mouth to say a word, that I don't think that the reasons or socio-economic reasons that directed us as a country to put that effort into place has changed. So I'm inclined that we appreciate the bill, but I don't think that the department was not here last week. Two questions that Mr. Swartz put lingered on my mind for the whole week. One being, does the proposer envisage or realize that the constitutional amendment he is proposing could render the act unconstitutional? That's the first question he posed. The other one, he said that, or if we still starting a process, can I ask you to rephrase your question, Mr. Swartz? I hope you remember it.
Yes, I do.
The second
one. Sure, well, firstly, I ask her. I mean, I put my own opinion if a change would render the outcome confusing, but I ask her for her opinion. As you just stated, the second question relates to, I mean, from the way we were addressed, it was clear that it's once again the anti-abortion lobbying of country. I've tried to some way get it into a discussion that talk about rights and right to live and talk about rights unborn children. But it's clear that it's a focus point. And because of that I ask is this a thing to be done? Or is this the start of a process like a first hurdle to overcome when you change the constitution, which will make it a lot easier for that specific lobby, of which I make a rebel be a part. I'm not yet explained, I think. But would that be the first step for that lobby to then, with all vigour, attack the act itself, relying on the constitutional change? And I personally foresee that that will very well be the case, and she actually admitted.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. I want to say that I started this way because I want to show the department, and maybe it might be helpful, that we seriously go to great lengths to examine a proposal when it is put before us, and we are honest and frank with one another. Those questions were very frank and very direct, and they were answered very frankly and very directly and very honestly.
We appreciate it.
Yes, which is very appreciated. So, for me, this is the cornerstone of what is before us. If we say yes, we must bear in mind that we are possibly facilitating the realization of those questions which I now, I mean, convert from questions into concerns we must bear in mind. That saying yes could mean, I'm not saying it could be the case, could mean that we, if we pass the constitutional bill, saying yes to it, when it becomes in place, it's going to render the current anti-abortion laws, the POP laws, unconstitutional, and it is going to also usher in the second thing, the anti-abortion lobby to attack the law. So the question, the next question that we ask ourselves as a committee is that what we want? Is there any other thing we can do to avoid that? Is it desirable? That we always ask the question of desirability. Is it desirable to have that question? I hope I've not too entered your input. So having said this, I will open to the department. First, maybe we must introduce ourselves as a committee and then ask the department to introduce itself and then from there then present your advice to us. I am taking into the session of the committee. Let me start with my staff member first, then we can go that side. So now we will be introduced.
My name is Bolida.
Chairman, I'm just told Flux, but I do think the volume of it turned down even when you started to address us, when you started the committee.
That's why
we
must arrive, and this is not working.
Roy Ainsley, member of the committee.
Inka Miles, member of the committee.
My name is Tole, Assistant Mshutulu, a member of this committee.
I'm Ned Kavale, I'm the Director of Women's Health and Genetics Good morning, my name is Moises Mosafi, and I'm the Director of Women's
Health. Good morning, my name is Jan Maram, I'm the Deputy Director for Women's Health and Genetics Management.
What's your name?
Diane
Marima. Okay. That is parliamentary. CGA, what is CGA? CMG.
CMG.
Parliamentary
monitoring. Sorry, I'm Pan from PMG. Thank you.
You're monitoring us. But your minutes are quite handy. Always. When we are accused that we did not meet or what were the decisions, the record is very accurate and very funny as always. Congratulations, man. We would die without you. This thing is not working, but I will suggest that we continue using it just so that we must realize when it is working. It's not working for now, I don't know. I would listen to when today is right, but okay. Sufficient. So we're going to lose the record. Okay, it will be changed. Is the department input also in so that we need the audio record is trained to rely on the system? Okay. Can I have coffee?
Thank you, Chair. struck me as that today the department is that because of the nature of the submission of the private member bill, that we ask Mr. President Masafi to lead because of the legal aspect of it. Because I think your summation is absolutely correct. And I think we therefore need to deal with the substance of what is before us and conclude that. And I think it's really a legal argument, so Masafi will take us to the legal argument.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. First and foremost, I'd like to apologize for not having coordinated the response or the submission by the department and also numbered the paragraphs. I think it would have been easier if questions are raised from there.
Are you advising us to number them as to proceed?
Yes, I think it would be easier. Yes. In response, the Department of Health submits the following. That first paragraph will be paragraph number one. Section 1 of the Constitution, 1996, states that South Africa is a democratic state founded inter alia on human dignity, the achievement of equality, and the advancement of human rights and freedom. Accordingly, the citizens of this country are afforded the rights corresponding to this section. In the same vein, Chairperson, these citizens have responsibilities and can never enjoy the rights if they act in a manner that contravenes the Constitution. If that happens, Chairperson, rights become limited in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. This is just an illustration that rights have corresponding responsibilities. Paragraph 2. Section 11 protects the right of everyone to life. The legislature's intention was clearly to recognize this right insofar as it pertains to a living everyone. The section would have indicated that prenatal life is also recognized if this right proposed by the ACDP superseded any other right that the mother had. Section 28 defines a child as any person under the age of 18 years. Person is not defined in that section, nor is there any expatiation on age. That is when that one starts counting in terms of the age of the child. Safe to summarize and correctly for Chairperson, that counting begins at birth, and that's when rights and responsibilities are true and therefore life.
Sorry, can I just stop you there? Just to correct something in it. I'm sorry, let's turn the ACDP
Paragraph 3, we start with Section 27, guarantees everyone the right to access to inter alia health care services, including reproductive health care. Subsection 2 thereof enjoins the state to take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve the progressive realization of this right. Accordingly, the choice on termination of Pregnancy Act 1996, that is the top act, is a consequence of this section. Had it been an intention of the drafters to recognize the proposed limitation to this right by the fetus right to life, then that would have been the case. Paragraph 4, notwithstanding, we have recognized the fact that termination may not be performed at any time. In fact, the top act serves as a limitation to the absolute right of the woman to decide when she can terminate her pregnancy. This, however, does not in any way provide an inference that rights accrue before birth. The top act therefore regulates the circumstances under which termination may be done, thereby confirming the right of the woman to terminate, albeit under certain circumstances. Generally, this act makes termination accessible to a woman for pregnancies of up to 12 weeks and only under special and specific circumstances from week 13. This limitation is reasonable and justifiable as envisaged by Section 36 of the Constitution. To limit this right even further, Chairperson, will invariably encroach on the right to human dignity, privacy, social and bodily integrity, sometimes psychological integrity. Paragraph 5, The preamble to the court text, Chairperson, has provided an instructive tool to understanding and using this text. It stems from the fact that a woman has the right to make decisions concerning reproduction and to security in and control over their body. That the Act recognizes the right to access to appropriate health care services to ensure safe pregnancy and childbirth. More importantly, Chairperson, that the decision to have children is fundamental to women's physical, psychological, and social health. That the state has the responsibility to provide reproductive health to all, and also to provide safe conditions under which the right of choice can be exercised without fear or harm. Paragraph 6. Regarding the proposals, it is clear that they are based on the misguided and rather unfortunate misreading of the 1998 case. The proposal makes an inference that was never intended by the court. The proposal is premised on the fact that the court ruled on what the Constitution explicitly makes provision for, and therefore it did not preclude a situation where a fetus would be recognized if and when the Constitution is amended. If it were the court's intention, it would have made a remark to the effect that the plaintiffs would have succeeded if they were to change the third clause of the Constitution. In fact, Chairperson, in its closing remarks, though not a judgment as such, the court stated that the Nasitugas rule has since 1935 not been recognized in our jurisprudence. This is stated in the case of Elliott v. Tracy, it's a 1995 decision, and confirmed in the 1978 judgment of Payton v. Justice of DPAS, where it was ruled that the fetus did not enjoy any protection in law against abortion, and that the Nasitugas fiction could not be invoked to confer such protection. This was an indication that the third court recognized the right of the woman to decide, as is the case in other countries' laws that we often refer to shape our democratic principles. Paragraph 7.
Sorry, will you come back later to explain to us your late report?
Oh, okay.
Last
week.
Yes.
I'm sorry to include legalese.
No, you don't have to.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. The court further made reference to two judgments held in the German Constitutional Court. The court stated as follows: these two German cases, in any event, do not support the contention advanced by the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs, that is the Christian associations in the case against the Minister of Health. In their pleadings, in the present case, that Section 11 of the Constitution confers an absolute right to life on the fetus. Firstly, in the 1975 case, the court did not hold that the fetus is a person, but that fetal life has an independent legal value worthy of protection. Secondly, in both the 1975 and 1993 cases, the German Constitutional Court also gave express recognition to the constitutional protection of the woman's right to her own dignity, physical integrity, and personal development, and sought to strike a balance between the state's obligation to protect fetal life on the one hand and its obligation to protect the autonomy of the woman on the other. Hence our submission, Chairperson, that the 1998 judgment does not make any suggestion for the qualification of life and child in Section 11 and 28 of the Constitution.
Is that paragraph 8,
right? No. I'm so sorry. We are now in paragraph 8, which starts with hence our submission. The quoted passage above mirrors the precise intention of the top expert. As alluded to supra, that is previously, there are limitations to this right, particularly after the 12th week. But the woman's right is accentuated by this act, as is required by Section 27(2) of the Constitution. Paragraph 9. In 2004, Chairperson.
Just a moment. Can I just. I want you to underline something. Paragraph 7. You will come back to Section 11 of the Constitution to clarify whether that you refer to the South African or the German Constitution.
Yes, our Constitution.
Can I propose that you answer?
My apologies.
Okay,
Paragraph 9 starts with, in 2004,
The Changwon Provincial Division made a compelling and profound ruling in the Christian Lawyers Association versus Minister of Health, the 2004 judgment, that Section 12.2 of the Constitution of South Africa specifically guaranteed the woman's right to bodily and psychological integrity, including the right to make decisions concerning reproduction and security in and control over their body. The woman was accordingly given the right to determine the fate of her pregnancy within the limits of the law. This is further reinforced by other constitutional rights, being the right to equality and protection against discrimination on the grounds of gender, sex, and pregnancy, the inherent right to dignity and to have their dignity respected and protected, the right to privacy, and more importantly, the right to reproductive health care. Paragraph 10. Any limitation of the right constituted a limitation of a woman's fundamental right and was therefore valid only to the extent that such limitation is reasonable and justifiable in terms of the limitation clause. We must here state that Section 2 of the TOP Act encapsulates this limitation. Beyond this limitation, Section will be infringing on the rights of the woman, and such limitation will be impugned. The state cannot unduly interfere with the right to choose whether or not to undergo an abortion. Paragraph 11. The Canadian court chairperson in Rodriguez v. British Columbia also confirmed the notion of protecting the autonomy of the woman so that she has control over her bodily integrity free from psychological and emotional stress, that the right of the woman is paramount and must take prevalence over any other right that another person, including the fetus, may have. In interpreting paragraph 12, In interpreting Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights, the European Commission held that although the woman has the right of self-determination, it was permissible for the state to regulate abortion. In the said 2004 decision, that is the decision by the Christian Lawyers Association versus Minister of Health, paragraph 13, the court ruled that this right is part of the cornerstone of democracy that enshrines the right of all people in this country, that is South Africa. This court further quotes the 1990 decision of Administrator Natal versus Edward, 1990 decision, where it was said there is no justification for holding, as a matter of law, Jefferson, that the birth of an unwanted is a blessing. The birth of such a child may be a catastrophe, not only for the parents and the child itself, but also for the previously born siblings. Paragraph 14, nowhere does any of the decisions mentioned intimate any need to protect the rights of the fetus over that of the woman. These are primarily premised on the legal argument that life begins at birth, when rights and responsibilities accrue, not at conception. In other words, legal personality begins at birth. This is when the child will start to realize the nature of such rights. The TOP Act provides for that right, but further limits it in accordance with Section 36, that is from week 13. This view was also confirmed by the Fourth World Conference on Women, which was held in Beijing. This conference confirmed the Cairo Program's definition of reproductive health, that it includes the right to have control over sexuality, including reproductive health, etc. Paragraph 15. The proposal, Chairperson, submitted would accordingly constitute an impairment of the woman's right to bodily and psychological integrity, and more particularly of their right to make decisions concerning reproduction and to security in and control over their body. In the premises, Chairperson, it would be a total disregard of the fundamental rights of the woman to assume and therefore propound that the right of an unborn being prevails over those of a person who is capable of taking informed decisions on when she wants to have children. This would be an antithesis to the basic principles founding our constitution and democracy. Paragraph 16. We have also not been made aware how the limitation is to be implemented. That is the practicalities around psychological, emotional, and financial support for the woman and the baby. The proposed the proposal is presumptuous and repugnant to accepted principles of law on the right of women to decide on their reproductive health. It is presumptuous in that the fetus must be presumed as if it were a child and the right kept in abeyance until birth. No mention is made of consequential elements of such protection. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. You must define to me what presumptuous means. Okay.
Sir, I don't think it's about an explanation, and I've read through it, and I've listened carefully, I've read it, and I think it is a worthy input by the Department of Health. But, Madam Chair, the last sentence on the third page has started the proposal, which says it's presumptuous and repugnant. Now, I do not think it is for the Department of Health to come to Parliament and make those remarks about the proposal by a member of parliament. It doesn't add any value to their presentation. There's no need for that to be included in the presentation. And through you, Madam Chair, I would like them to withdraw that last, starting from the proposal, withdraw it from the official presentation and the records. I do not think it would be fit apart as a department to make those remarks in the official presentation.
I fully agree with you. Just that as a chair and as a woman, I was going to be gentle but going to derive the same result. I was deliberately asking what presumptions mean. I was going to go to the other way in the whole paragraph because I was going to fully, perhaps mildly than you, but emphasize that is not the kind of language that we even use to one another as members of parliament, but we are all learning. So I would, from the chair, second the remark from Mr. Swart, fully agree with him that your whole presentation is highly valued. We take exception to the language used when you conclude from the way from the last paragraph, the 16th one, the last part of it where she says the proposal is presumptuous and repugnant to accepted principles of law. We don't even use that language to honestly to one another. We are governed by certain rules of parliament that you may not be aware of. In a court of law, you argue this way, but in parliament, we don't argue this way. So I hope you find it in order to remove the whole part. You can rephrase it, you can still convey the message, but in fact, that decision you must leave to us. Mm-hmm. You must just put the legal case before us. So I think even if you don't replace that last portion of anything, that is our decision to say what we think of the proposal. This is not the role of the department. Mm-hmm. So I will give you the right to remove it yourself, if not to remove it for you. This is your moment to do that.
Thanks, Chairperson. I must apologize, Chairperson. It was not based on any intention to reflect on the integrity of the proposal or the honorable member who made the proposal. And accordingly, we withdraw that sentence unconditionally, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. And I still want to emphasize that your whole input is highly valued. And it's accepted and will direct us now to take the discussion. I will forward. I will open for members of parliament now. Mr. Swartz, again.
Yes,
that's why I looked at it.
I thought you answered.
You are intimidating them, that's why.
Yes,
thank you.
When we sorted that out, and I thank the department for the way in which I accept our opinion on that. After that, Chair, let me thank them for a legally concise document and succinct in thought. I was busy reading the documents, I didn't mark the paragraphs. So I'll refer to page 2 and page 1 and those type of things.
You are a naughty.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't even hear when you thought I was busy reading it. I normally read the document like this a lot quicker than it's been presented, and I apologize for that. Page 2 in the middle,
mm-hmm.
where the German, where the court is quoted, the two German cases are quoted, just that highlighted, your emphasis part, and sort of strike a balance between the state's obligation to protect truth and life on the one hand, its obligation. But maybe just from a department of health legal point of view. I just like some.
Paragraph is
it? Yeah. See, that is the bold one in the middle of the second page.
Okay.
It's 7, sorry.
Yeah.
Just from a legal point of view, on behalf of the department of health, just some comments on that. Remarks about the state's obligation to protect future life. And maybe you can also use this up to now if you wanted to explain to the chair and the other members who want to know about the Nascituras fiction, Nascituras program of ATA. We did talk a bit about it last week, but just maybe a bit of explanation that for that purpose. But just from your point of view, what do you understand in that remark, the state's obligation to protect future life? And then don't just say, in contrast to the rights of the woman, let's talk about the right to life. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Yes, before I say, in your responses, you'll also explain that concept that I asked you about. So you know that is the first thing that you'll do. Mr. Ainsley?
There are plenty of quite a number of references to foreign judgments. I'm just curious what these foreign judgments, what effect do they have on our own decisions in our court? What influence do they have? The second question is in paragraph 4, where you mention that under special and specific circumstances, abortion may be obtained from week 13. Can you give an indication of what those special circumstances are? And you say from week 13 up until what point? And then just to say generally, Chairperson, that last time you sort of shadow boxed the law to a very large extent under the guidance of Mr. Swart, but that today, finally, we've got precisely and concisely exactly what the pertinent section of the law is, and that is extremely useful. The decision that we must make hopefully today.
Shadow boxes. Do I agree with the fact that you
made
us shadow box?
you come from Northern Cape, I presume shadow boxes have a different opinion there than down in the Western Cape. I come from West Coast, so they'll do it well. You also have a different idea of shadow boxing. I take it for where it's come and
okay.
And it's nice no chauvinist way of talking about fictitious pugilism.
Okay,
just an addition, Chairperson. I just wanted to hear from the department whether there is a bill in process. I read somewhere on the amendment of the termination of pregnancy bill. And the reason I'm asking that, not in terms of process, is that if the department is busy with a bill that has to do with the relevant subject that we are dealing with now. How will this impact on the bill at hand?
I did not understand your question.
No, I was just taking the question. That it looks like somewhere I might have read that the department is busy with an amendment to the termination of pregnancy bill.
You want to confirm that?
I just wanted to confirm that.
And whether if that is the case...
Then how would this, yeah, without preempting, but because I think it's important at this stage also to know what is in the department's pipeline as it relates to this. Because they've given the legal interpretation of the situation, but on the process in terms of legislating. Okay, yeah. Yeah, because it's important at this stage.
Any other input before I ask my question? an input. We normally, and we are very dynamic in this committee, we pose questions, sometimes we answer one another. I would like to try to respond to Mr. Ainsley's question, but I'm not subsecting the right of the department to also answer that question about what is the relevance of international legal precedent to South Africa and to us and to this case. I was personally brought up, I wouldn't say ideologically or politically, but even at home to be an internationalist, it helps to be to draw lessons from the world, especially for the women's rights movement. International lobby and international cases, etc., like you call Beijing, is often very relevant and very helpful. And just to say, by way of not boasting, just to inform you that I'm on my way to the DRC to address women parliamentarians from all over Africa on issues of women's rights, including reproductive health rights. So this paper will also help me to your presentation today to update my knowledge, to harness my input to that meeting. So international, I'm sure not only from a legal perspective, but from drawing lessons from the world are always important. But you will still respond, you must still respond to Mr. Ainsley's question. I'm very happy with the proposal before us, and I don't have any arguments with it. I think it's taking us to the right direction. I've just seen a wink, an inkling of a hand beside. You wanted to say something. So I don't have much to say, but to say that I think this is driving us towards the right direction, and we will be able to take a decision today.
Listen, I wanted to move a step further to support your earlier assertion, because I'm not going to be asking questions. I think the arguments raised by the department are enough to allow me to make a decision. So I would propose that we do not support the proposal by the member of the ACDP.
The youth league, so you like jumping the gun. I can tell Mrs. Mark nodding in agreement.
I'm not from
he comes from Blackfish. I think okay.
As the mother of the committee, I'm quite sure you'll keep the young boy employed.
But I will note what he said. Indeed. I will give over to the department. Mr. Ainsley?
So just that I'll agree with everything you said in regard to my question about sovereign jurisdictions and court cases. But I was asking from a legal perspective, legally what influence does a German decision have on the South African Court of Law? The rest of course are politically closed out in within time.
I hope you're not moving into the arena of sovereignty. This is much want to say something.
I just said to Roy under my breath, it's illustrative rather than
Department, over to you, please.
But thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the Natura principle. Chairperson, basically that rule stems from what was usually called Natura fiction. The fetus in the mother's womb is I'm afraid to use presume again. The fetus in the womb is presumed to be a person in inverted commas, a person who has the rights and responsibilities that any other person may have who is a living person. But those rights are kept in abeyance until the birth of the fetus. So there are rights, but they are kept in abeyance until birth.
They cannot be revoked. Until birth.
Yes, but if one is to strictly apply this rule, it would mean that the fetus also has rights. you cannot do anything to it. Those rights that the fetus has will be kept in abeyance until the birth of the child. I'm struggling to get, you know, the very simple way to explain it.
So young, Papa.
Yes.
Older people really do.
So you are refuting this fiction law or whatever
Yes.
in your argument?
Yes.
Okay. Now you may proceed to answer other questions.
Sure. Jumping with a quick follow-up question. We had a little discussion about the fiction last week, and the proposer mentioned the case Pinkham vs. Sompom, which I'm quite sure you as a first year law student, as I did decades ago, that was our case regarding the jurisdiction. I don't think your memory is better than mine as to, I mean, I know what the case went about, but just maybe you should just enlighten us if you do remember about that case. Oh, that's what role that case.
I'm not going to allow that.
No, I just thought you could tell because I couldn't remember last week and I actually didn't look it up. I know what it's about, that's just let me rephrase, Jay. What you are stating in terms of your document is that the Pinkham versus Sompom case didn't in any way make the Naskitu jurisdiction applicable in our law.
What I'm saying, Jefferson, is that the Nasitura fiction is not applicable. We are proposing that it should not apply. I'm afraid to confirm what Honorable Member is saying, but I don't have the judgment.
And he'll remind his my memory tonight. He must go and read his book or in the corridors. Yes, okay. You may proceed to answer other questions.
Thanks, Jefferson. Another question that came from Honorable Member Mr. Swart was in paragraph 7, that is the protection sought to strike a balance between the state obligation to protect fetal life on the one hand and its obligation to protect the autonomy of the woman on the other. I must first and foremost, Jefferson, say that the question that Honorable Member asked relating to the right to fetal, the right of the fetus to life, cannot be exclusively answered without making reference to the right of the woman to take a decision relating to her pregnancy. I understand that Honorable Member said, you know, without making reference to the right of the woman. It is my humble opinion that you cannot respond to that without making any reference to the right of the woman to take a decision, because the right of the fetus will invariably impact on the right of the woman to take a decision whether to continue with the pregnancy or not continue with the pregnancy.
Please, follow
me.
Jefferson, you have state my question properly. Would you allow me to restate that part of my question to another? In other words, the answer I'm getting, that argument I agree with, and I've got that. What I'm trying to say, this whole argument is that Nascituris doesn't apply, that there's actually no rights. Because that's the argument. In other words, the unborn fetus doesn't have any rights. But then we talk about the state's obligation to protect the fetal life. If there's an obligation on the state to protect a fetus, that by itself would create the impression, and I'm trying to use my words carefully, that would tend to create the impression that indeed there are rights, because you can't have an obligation. Obligation on one hand is in response to a right on the other hand. I just want that part of it, the using of the word obligation to protect, that must be a result of a right. So you understand. So I don't want to, it's not the question is not about the balance of the two. But if you talk about the balance, you once again talk about the balancing of rights. But they can't, like, I mean, I'm not arguing my any personal opinion. I'm just want to get clarity on the argument about rights.
I'm going to leave this meeting with you. We're going to come back to your issue in paragraph 7. But you are going back to Narcissus' rule of which or fiction So you are actually asking a second question, or we are compounding your question until I answer that. For that reason, I'm packing the response to your question and the fact that you're not satisfied with the response or whatever, so that we proceed with the other questions that members have asked, and then we'll go back to your question. So you may proceed with Mr. Ainsley's other questions, and both questions actually, and Mr. Mshudi's, and Paul Singh will be the last thing. Otherwise, we'll hear what I'm recording.
Okay, thank you. That's why I suggested that I do the last one to answer.
thanks, Chairperson. Relating to Honourable Member Mr. Ainsley, the reference to foreign judgments, what influence do they have in our case? Chairperson, there is no, the cases that are decided abroad do not form a precedent to the judgments in South Africa, except that when judgments are made in South Africa, judges usually, particularly where there is no sufficient kind of precedent in South Africa, they usually make researches on other countries that have long regulated, for instance, the issue of abortion, so as to sort of find some way of forming an opinion and ultimately a judgment on a particular matter. But they do not have some kind of precedence on what we have in South Africa.
Just a moment. I will open for our legal researcher to also have an input. He has an input to make at this point. The one about international foreign judgments.
Yeah, there's two issues here. The international foreign judgments have a persuasive value, especially where there's certain gaps in South African case law. It has persuasive value, and that was the iterating efforts from Makwanyane. That international agreements and international customary law also have certain persuasive values. And to answer just a quick little mention on the set obligations that come from the international... Okay.
Yeah, when we go back to Italy,
we'll
speak with you. I want
to show the boxes to the
okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm going to ask my colleague, Dr. Kaule, here to respond to the issue on which setting the circumstances under which termination may be allowed. The second question by Honourable Member.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, to respond to that, we would have to look at the Act, because the Act is explained very clearly in the Act as to what, when the circumstances arise and what should be done. So I don't know if I should go to the Act and read directly from the Honourable Members would be happy to just go back to the Act and look at it.
We can actually do both.
Okay.
You can do a synopsis of what is in the Act.
Yes.
Then we'll go back on our own time to whether it's the Act to educate ourselves. If that is okay with you.
Yeah. Section 2 says a pregnancy may be terminated, and it goes through and everything upon the request of a woman during the first 12 weeks of the gestation period of a pregnancy. From the 13th up to and including the 20th week of the gestation period, if a medical practitioner, after consultation with a pregnant woman, is of the opinion that 1. The continued pregnancy poses a risk of injury to the woman's physical or mental health, or 2. There exists a substantial risk to the fetus that the fetus would suffer from a severe physical or mental abnormality, or 3. The pregnancy resulted from rape or incest, or 4. The continued pregnancy would significantly affect the social or economic circumstances of the woman, or, and that goes to section C, after the 20th week of the gestation period, if a medical practitioner, after consultation with another medical practitioner or a registered midwife, is of the opinion that the continued pregnancy would endanger the woman's life, 1. 2. Would result in a severe malformation of the fetus, or 3. Would pose a risk of injury to the fetus. And it goes on, the termination of a pregnancy may only be carried out by a medical practitioner except for a pregnancy referred to in subsection 1A, which may also be carried out by a registered midwife who has completed a prescribed training, and that is in the first trimester, the first 12 weeks.
Very helpful. Thank you very much. I hope we are going to hear the voice of the lady don't like it when women are put into the delegation just to decorate the delegation and then go back not having said a word. Hope you'll create a space for her to do something at some point. Thank you very much. You may proceed to answer the question.
Thanks, Chairperson. next question by Honorable Mushu Dul. Whether there is a bill in progress. Chairperson, there is an amendment bill that is currently being processed. Basically, the amendment bill seeks to devolve the powers of the minister with regard to the designation of facilities to the MECs in the province. Yes, to the provinces. And also list the requirements under which that designation or approval can be made, and also the keeping of records. And also one important section in the amendment bill is the creation of an offence. Currently, if a doctor carries out a termination of pregnancy in a facility that is not designated, that is not taken as an offence. So we have included that to say that only, the termination of pregnancy can only be performed in designated facilities.
Is the minister devolving the powers to the MEC or to the provincial director general? To the MEC?
To
maybe we can give the lady. I actually have the amendment in front of me and she knows them in detail.
Thank you. The minister is devolving the powers to the NUC, not to the head of health. But what will be done by the head of health is to collect statistics and then send them to the director general. So that's the power that is given to the head of health. But what we are saying is that the 24 medical obstetric units, 24-hour obstetrical units, are rendered designation automatically, but they also have to be looked into if they meet the requirements that have been set in the Act. And we are also in the amendment stating that the registered nurses, previously the Act was saying registered midwives, now we are saying registered nurses who are trained can provide termination of pregnancy. So those are the amendments, but to further answer him, it has nothing to do with this process. Thank you.
I'll
ask you to. Yes, it does not have anything to do with this process. I note with interest that in that amendment, you are going to allow an ordinary nurse who is not a midwife to give them the power since they are trained also to terminate. We have interest. I must declare my interest in that process, and we will meet you with the department, with the committee at another level. As members of parliament, we have the right to engage in any committee at any time. So we declare our interest, and we will follow up on it. Maybe it does not have a direct bearing on this proposal. However, it does not suppress our right to engage with it at the level at which you will engage the committee of parliament when the time comes. So we have an interest. I have a vested interest in it.
No, Jefferson, the first thing that led to my question is just to have the committee, because the sponsor of the bill is a member of that committee, you see, without prejudice. That's, I think, the other one is exactly, and I must just confirm something. I'm a neighbor to the Howlers, next to Levine Bata in Everton. So that is my constituency.
She's talking about my mother.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really?
So what happens is that also that's our constituency, as you correctly confirmed, that we do have an interest. But the other thing is, the such debates sometimes are also entertained in the process by the relevant committee, so that whatever decision you come up with, most of you as a chairperson, as you would maybe consult or confer with the relevant chairperson, you are then able to flag some of the sensitive issues. Because political parties in committees, we have that responsibility, despite the object of the bill, in the process of legislative working to advance whatever we are supposed to. Yeah.
Okay. You still
That was the only question from Samshini. So
that was the question. Go back to Musa, start this issue, although he's collating it with that difficult thing of yours. I must go and memorize this thing 10 times tonight. I'll do it alone at home.
And don't bite your tongue.
I went through this process as a lame person. I'm a medical doctor, and yesterday I actually did quite a lot of research around it. And I must honestly say I've been trying to see if I wrote it down, but it's very interesting because there's the fiction and the rule. And I even asked my colleague, because you use both, and you have to distinguish. Once something is fiction, it implies that it belongs to that realm. But once it's explained, you use the rule. And I think the legal minds will... But I agree with you, Madam Chairperson. It would be nice to look at it. I don't know the derivation from the Greek or Roman. It is Latin, except for nascent. Nascent in English.
No, it comes from the Latin.
I must warn the department, Comrade Paul, I deliberately call him Paul, Comrade Paul, although he comes from the DA, I come from the ANC. We are comrades in arms, in patriotism, building a new South Africa. He's a lawyer, and he misses the courtroom. And he converts the committee room into a courtroom. So consider yourself warned. The reply is yes.
Thanks, Captain. I'm going to try by all means to respond to this question, because I've been kind of thinking about it and how best to respond to it. Chairperson, maybe let me first also mention the circumstances that Dr. Kaole expanded on, that related to Honourable Member's Ainsley's question about the circumstances under which termination may be performed. Those also, in speaking about the right to fetal life, as I said, one has to strike this balance so that, and that balance is about the woman's right to terminate pregnancy, but that right is limited, obviously, in terms of Section 36, and the circumstances that are in Section 2, those circumstances form the limitation to the right of the woman. She can decide to have termination only at any time, only up to the 12th week. But from the 12th week, there are specific circumstances under which a woman can terminate. So it's not an absolute right that the woman has. Hence my emphasis on the balance between the protection of the fetus. So in protecting the fetus, one has to look at the woman's rights, but those women's rights are not absolute. They are limited in terms of Section 36 and Section 2 of the TOP Act. Chairperson, I think I have responded.
Just before you fall, I will take our legal reflection there, then yourself, Paul.
I hope this will answer the question of the Honourable Member. The state obligation in that specific German decision stems from the International Covenant on the Right of Protection of the Protection of the Child. And in it, it specifically states that the member states or signatory states have a duty to protect fetal life, but that does not infer that the child, the fetus, has a right to life. It just means that it cannot, that the child cannot arbitrarily be aborted or injured. And that's where the state obligation comes from, stems from, it's from the protection of the child.
Paul, you're going to speak for the last time on this issue, and then we'll close it and move to the proposal that was made by the young member of the meeting.
Okay, now, well, if you listen carefully, well, the questions I asked the proposal after, and the question I asked him today, is because I want to illustrate the specific point which I kept in abeyance to when we discuss our decision. Because often I ask questions
Well, I know the answers to. I just want the perspective from what they understand what is that obligation. But even that, Chair, I won't get us into a long debate about these things. But that remark that you just made to our legal person there is just the international community's way of getting by the problem. That's all it is. And that is the whole problem with this. It is such a, I don't want to use the word theory, it's such a difficult thing, this abortion or no abortion, rights or no rights to the fetus. I mean, we do know that the 12 weeks are easy to get by, because at the 12 weeks, and I'm not speaking to the doctor, at the 12 weeks, the fetus doesn't have any chance of living outside of the host. Then after that, that's also part of the LGBTQ's argument. I'm trying to use scientific terms for that purpose. I'm trying to cut it away from emotions or from people. But if you take exception, you can apologize and say, woman, I was trying to just get... But that's exactly the problem, Chair. And that is why I personally do not see that this proposal in any way should reopen the whole debate that this country went through in the 90s about this whole thing. I would only have been prepared to do so, and you know me, I would have done so, if the proposer came with sufficient new information or data that suggests that this country, that the people of this country are clearly of the opinion that this should be re-looked at. But all these other legal things, all these rights or no rights or whatever, even to suggest that there's an obligation against something that doesn't have any rights at all, it just doesn't make sense. That's all part of the way the world, not just South Africa, that's part of the way the world, and all the countries of the world, struggles with this concept, this thing of life before, or rights and life before birth. And that's why I asked the question, because I think we need to give some, I thought, last week, that we need to give some time, at least, in this committee, as to that, without turning it into a full-scale debate. Just those things to make it easier for us to say, because I don't intend to go away, Chair, stating that these things make sense, that it's clear-cut. There's no right, so there shouldn't be any obligation, because that is not the case. All I'm prepared to state is, as Member of Parliament, I'm not prepared to get involved in another long emotional debate, because that's what it is, emotional debate, or principled debate about pro and anti. And as I said, we didn't get anything sufficient new that the majority of the people of this country think it is now time for us to relook at the whole thing. But I want to thank on my side as well the partner for the input.
Yes, sir. I hope you're not offering the debate. Be careful not to.
No, Madam Chair, I'm not going to do that. Just to say that the confidential inquiry into maternal deaths in South Africa, in each of the last three reports, has recorded that abortion is one of the major causes of death of women. Firstly. Secondly, they have indicated that there is an improvement with the reduction of abortion deaths from sepsis and hemorrhage, although they're still there, with the enaction of the new Choice of Termination Act. And the recommendation that they come up with is that the Choice of Termination of Pregnancy Act should be more robustly applied by the department in order to protect those women who still don't have sufficient access to safe abortion. So you are right, the circumstances around which they pertained at the time of passing of the Act have not changed. And secondly, that there are many women who have benefited from the Act in that their life has not been lost, and they haven't become gynecological cripples, even if they survived, because illegal abortion can lead to other problems of infertility, mental disturbances, chronic pelvic pain, and continued lifelong morbidity, all of which are reduced by the Termination of Pregnancy Act.
Thanks. firstly, before we move to the conclusion and what we're going to do with this bill, it's pointing to the direction of a no. I just want to, before we to address myself to the department, sometimes in the cycle of parliament we miss things. So we use this opportunity to communicate also to the department. You know, the fact that you are going to give ordinary nurses if trained the right to terminate them by law, it's worrying me already at the back of my mind. Given the challenges that our health system is facing currently, I must tell you that I'm a former teacher. I taught biological sciences, including genetics and things like those. Mm-hmm. I'm also a former member of the South African Nursing Council. And I participated from A to Z into the new curriculum, the nursing curriculum, including issues of midwifery and all those things. And I know the problems of an ordinary nurse having to deliver a baby. It's a non-starter. Now, an ordinary nurse having to terminate a pregnancy poses a big question mark in my mind already. So I will try to see the cycle of parliament. Maybe I will write to you personally as a member of parliament my observations and my concerns about that bit of amendment that you are going to and considering all other things. But I see you, ma'am, you want to say something. I'll open for you. Then we'll go back to the proposal to do a summary of what you are going to do with this proposal.
Thank you, madam. I just want to reassure you that already a group of nurses were trained, registered nurses, professional nurses were trained, and they are doing very well. They are monitored so closely, and they are doing very well in termination of pregnancy. They are given a little bit of midwifery for them to understand the palpitation and everything. And then they are trained in the curriculum that's suitable for them, and they are doing very well.
Yeah. I would believe an independent monitor more than the department. So, but I take your word for it. But scientifically, I would not take your just to be accurate scientifically. If you do self-assessment, it's not like if somebody assesses you from externally. So I don't want to open a debate here, but I would still write my concerns to the department. You will decide whether you throw them down the drain or you shred them or whatever, but in my conscience, I would have told you what I think I should tell you as a department. I do acknowledge that the department didn't expect to give ordinary nurses a bit of a midwifery, because that's my starting point. You can't successfully terminate a pregnancy if you don't understand in the first place conception, the development of pregnancy, and delivery. Because termination is a reverse, and it's a potential risk to the body and all those things. But I don't want to show my knowledge of biological sciences and gynecology and whatever here. This is not about that, but I have serious concerns that I'm still going to raise with the department. Did you want to reply? Okay. I saw a hand here.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, I was just going to say thank you for telling us your concerns, because it always arms us as well to hear other opinions on this.
Just on that one, before I close it, because no, I think Jefferson, for instance, on the question of our clinics, and you see, the seriousness is not a question of how qualified nurses are, but the question of resources. I will avail my constituency report during the April month, which is the health month. I did an audit of all clinics around Everton, which is my area of clinic. And the challenges we have there, firstly, you find that you go to the very 24-hour Livaimbat, and that falls under the province, with one children doctor, given the high-density area. You see, the other one is that our clinics were not initially designed to be clinics. I mean, go to zone 3, it's a 4-room house that was converted into. I think those are challenges that go beyond what one would do, whether it's a qualified doctor. So, but I think, Chairperson, maybe what we should do, I want to take from what Advocate has raised, that when maybe you have a meeting, when maybe if there is a need to have a workshop within the committee on health, you make arrangements with him that we be invited to be part, so that we are then able to take this thing further. Because this is one area, including the whole members of parliament, we do have constituencies, and you cannot reach out as a department to all your areas. Coming also to the very, I did the last, but it was in 2003, in Sibukeng Hospital. You see, the very area where you there's a dedicated ward, am I right? There are many things that are linked up to access, and then you know which are not ordinarily understood by any person. So I would believe that is a complicated area, but it's important that we take that despite the legal boxing that has been going around here. But above other things, Chairperson, I'm sure the language used was intended to just explain. I just wanted to endorse that as members of Parliament, as we represent our constituencies, language has to be simplified and to be user-friendly. I'm just saying to us, so that those who, if there are visitors here, should understand that it is unacceptable to our ordinary people, yes, for lawyers and then doctors, yes, which we believe that is not the case, as you are drafters of our legislation. That's it.
Thank you. In our minutes, I want to endorse on some issues and proposals. Let me write to the Committee on Health to say that in line of the fact that there is this amendment coming, having considered this proposal, we have interest in concurrently discussing the issues with them, and we recommend that they organize a workshop in which we will participate with them, with the Department of Health also, on these issues. So, although we are moving towards rejecting the bill, we still want the workshop to further be involved in this amendment bill of the GOP. Yes, sir?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I wanted to do is to record the appreciation of the department to the spirit of this discussion, because I think it helps us as a department to think outside the box as well. But I think one would give assurance to the committee that whatever actions the department takes, it's in the interest of improving the access and the quality of health care for the citizens of South Africa. And I think that often the poor in the disadvantaged remote areas are the ones that have difficulty accessing the level of service that we would want them to have. Mm-hmm. And so we try to be as less restrictive as possible, but bearing in mind that if you are less restrictive, we've got to draw the line above which healthcare is quality and above below which healthcare is not quality. And I think that the reality in South Africa and many of our countries, most of us, is that we are not at that stage where we have doctors at all our institutions, including the rural areas, nor may we have midwives at all the institutions, including the rural areas. So what we have to do is to see how it is that we can penetrate those areas and provide those services. So if a lady in the rural area, disadvantaged area, requires the termination of pregnancy, she should not be disadvantaged as opposed to someone who's in Rondebosch who would have access to health care. And I think that that's really the issue that we have to look at. But I would give strong assurance to the committee that at no stage would we risk exposing a woman to an incompetent or an unqualified person to render health care to her across the board. And in this case, after careful consideration, those experienced nurses who are able to become competent after additional training would be allowed to do it. It does not say that any nurse who is not a midwife may do a termination training. We're not saying that. And I think that if one looks at the nursing curriculum at the moment, in the four-year diploma that they do, it includes midwifery. So there's no post-qualification midwifery. So actually, they're all qualified, basically. Now, I mean, there's lots of issues about that also, and the output skills, like also the output skills of other health professionals. But I want to assure the committee that the Department of Health would not at any stage declare or expose a person or a patient, irrespective of where the person lives, to a level of care that is not regarded as safe and comfortable.
We note those assurances. We are happy about them. But I will also want you to bear in mind that it's not all nurses in South Africa were trained under the new curriculum. Okay. So thank you very much. I'm proposing from the chair to second him that we must reject the deal for the following reasons. Where I started when we opened the meeting, I said socio-economic reasons and the reasons that obtained at the time when we put the OT bill act in place have not changed. That's the first thing. Secondly, as Paul puts it, we have no proof that South Africans at the moment, taking into account the statistics you quoted, well, statistics also, I don't want even to refer to them because we've not seen them, but you have referred to them, that are seemingly showing a decline in terms of the deaths that were caused by black street abortions before we legalized abortion. And you also taught me a concept today of, you said gynecological cripples. What did you say? have been reduced, etc. But I would strongly, because I've not looked into those results of those surveys or statistics and where they came from, just say that the reasons that obtained when South Africa decided on TOP, there is no evidence that they have changed. And secondly, that this bill, if enacted, will make the law unconstitutional. For that reason, we are saying no. However, we'll put the department together with the member proposing issues that the information that they put before the committee as record of Parliament. She has put before us a supporting document to support her argument. You have put before us documents as legal documents as those become part of our record. And we have considered both what she put before us and what the department has put before us, and we have applied our minds and we are rejecting the deal. Paul.
Sure, yes, I agree, but just, sorry, I was off the time. You said that if this proposal should eventually turn into amendment to the Constitution to render the TOP bill unconstitutional, there's nothing that I asked her that last week because I wanted to get to the frame of mind as to the reasons why it's proposing. Any right, if this goes through, it will grant a right. All rights can be limited, even that one. So it may force an amendment to the TOP Act, but we do not know if it was rendered unconstitutional. All I'm saying, I don't think we should put that into our finding. That's the first argument.
Let me persuade you further. If it will force us into a situation where we must amend the TOP Act, we would be doing so to align it with the new inception of the Constitution. And if we don't do that, the law, and we leave it like that, that law would be unconstitutional. That's what I mean. I don't know how to get you agree.
In the words of the people that Mr. Doodle asked for,
layman's words, in the fight of shadow boxing, you fictitiously
thank you very, very much.
I think, Chair, to be more safer, to have your conclusion, you see, if you go to the object of the bill, I think because we need to close on the object as advised by the sponsor, that it was aimed at ensuring reasonable protection on the right to life of the unborn. And I think the legal opinion has given us confidence in deciding the way we do, that the protections that are in place and in the light of the conditions, that has not changed. The status quo remains.
She didn't bring any proof to us.
Yes, I want you to link directly the objects, because she might read us wrongly. Not that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Paul. You know, I always...
And I second for the sake of technicalities, procedural technicalities.
Yes.
I should be recorded to second it, not yourself.
Yeah, okay, you have seconded, all right. No, I was moving you to the director.
Okay.
Paul, as usual, I would like you to read the conclusions of the committee from a legal perspective. Together with Mr. Ainsley and the lawyer sitting next to you, the advocate, to check if we have kept summarized them in a way that does not compromise us legally before we send it through to the system of funds.
No, if you can't finalize now, so we can...
The drafting.
Yes.
And on this note, let me thank everybody and wish you those departments who are going to fly home, land safely, and members that are going home also travel safely. Members, until we meet next week, and department, we hope to see you in that workshop that we are going to propose from our minister, Zoda. Yes.
No.
Sorry, we're not meeting next week.
Yeah.
Because it's what next week when we don't meet?
Be,
we're going to Bizana. Bizana.
Okay, back on Friday.
No, back on Friday.
No. Hey, please, I'm flying out on Friday.
After the committee.
No. Maybe let's leave it with you, Chairperson. We can't meet on a Friday.
I know we're not going to commit, so I'd rather not commit. Let's agree that we're not meeting next week.
Agree.
Let's agree.
Yeah, no,
there is a sit-down lunch where 12:30, all assembly, those who... Members, when are we going to adopt our means? Department, we will lead you to lunch. When are we going to adopt our minutes? We will correct. Where is Mr. Wang? Then we will correct. 50 plus, we are 12.
Yeah, I guess so.
We should be 7 to correct. If we call away, we won't be able. We are the second minutes that are not in.
Yeah.
We are 7. One, if when comes,
and
we are coming.
And can call off someone.
And you can call somebody off. If we are 7, we can endorse the minutes of the previous minutes.
Do we have copies of them?
Yes.
Ask them to bring them to the meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you can take the department to
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I was
supposed
to
be asking
him
to work with
him. But he referred to Divine
Bachelor.
No, I deliberately.
Okay, great.
No, it's not delivery.
As well, you from Liverpool.
Yeah.
I've been there many times. I'm from Bothell.
Yeah.
Bothell. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I used to be in Bothell. My
family. No, thanks.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There were decisions we took, brother, that I don't see on the minute. We said that we will conduct a survey to check the electors' views on floor crossing, because we observed that the mini survey the chairperson had done, the sample was too small, although instructive. So we said that we commissioned a survey or kind of, what do you call it? Yeah, I remember we took that decision. Yes, we must then. And there were two decisions we took. Is the research and a survey one thing? There are things that I had pointed out that are things that we need to look into. The issue of the threshold. Mm-hmm. I remember the threshold, but you must go and listen. And then with the amendment, if you after listening to the record, because I've already tasked the researcher to look for either a research institute or Martino or a university to do that electoral testing on floor crossing. So I don't want to appear like I gave out an instruction that had no basis in terms of arising from a meeting and then working progress today. So did you say that we will only commence in December? Because I thought that we should. It should be clear what we said about when, until when are we putting this thing in abeyance. I'm depending on the members' memories now. In that meeting.
Was in abeyance until the end of the policy conference.
Yeah.
The policy conference.
indicated the thing will be endorsed by the ANC December conference.
The idea was that
we should take up to December to research this and deal with it. That's why I'm looking at it.
Yes.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. We will do make up a raise because I want to report.
Thank you. I mixed up this meeting with the meeting of the 24th. I attended this meeting.
Okay.
I was there. I was yes. Everything you said.
So remove him from apology to attendance.
But to be included above.
Yes. Okay, now can we have a mover? Mr. Clark moved. Mrs. Mark second.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the 22nd with those amendments too. Then I sign. Today's date is the 14th. Really? Yeah. That's, okay. Should we do the matter? Those are done in a meeting situation. What are we going to do with matters arising? We're just endorsing the minutes.
No, this is just
passing
the minutes.
Okay, fine. Which
ones are sent better? Can I just add a rider that will help the whole package, Jefferson?
Mm.
That in this meeting we agree that we adopt the and ratify the minutes, but we agree that the secretary we should extract all those resolutions that relate to action to form the basis of our program. Then it will, yeah.
Chair, the one of the 24th we can't deal with today.
24th.
There's only one person here that meeting.
Chair, I recall that the meeting was a short meeting, and if you could find with me, I'll move to the doctor in a minute.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you very much. The one that we will also do is the one of last week, the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
At the back of 18.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Why do you put them like this? Okay. The 24th of May, at the back of the 18th, there is another set of minutes.
The meeting
that Mr. Wayne said after I left in the middle.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get all these minutes into some order. Which one are we? What?
Yeah.
That's the ninth.
The second of?
Did they say yes or no? You don't want stories like the last time. Before you come to any meeting, there are certain things that you must do. Like, if we are training at you must give us the update for the profession of a church. The minute that we must sign a church. 22nd of June, Nainsho was there, Wang was there, Shuru was there, Swaf was there.
Department of Justice and Constitutional Stability.
We should. I hate to see the word evil.
We've got electronic access. I'm prepared to move this.
It's So I'm saying, just on
this 7, why don't you defer this? Because it's true that we are going to take a decision on this one, and it also reflects some detail in terms of the presentation.
Just half page. I don't think that we spent 3 hours just doing this. Go and listen to the record and take it to the end. I'll also go and listen to the record, then we'll endorse them next time. They look so brief for me.
The other thing, Chairperson, if you may, you know, we might have gone through different training where one has to be brief, at least a reference to a document that one would know as tabled. So if there is no reference, it's like one was just a formal way of getting this thing through, which might not be intentional. Which is like as documents are numbered, so that's for the sake of record, because you need to keep them.
So I'll ask you to during the week to beef up 6 minutes of the 7. Then when they are ready, we'll receive the electronic thing, we'll bring them to our lecture. The 24, we can't do what they manage to do. Okay. Now, progress report on the Indian resolution. I don't know if we told members that we shifted from India to Brazil.
No, you can't do that.
You know,
another country remains Afghanistan or Pakistan.
It's a cross-sector. I hope the meeting is still officially continued. I'm reporting to members that when the Indian thing kept on being evading us, I said to Zola, she must look into a country of a where we would be able to fulfill similar intentions of the trip with the same amount of cost. Mm-hmm. Because the money is already locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't add it, you can't subtract it. So I said to her, she must go and look at, I go gave her 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
I want to know
Yes. I said to her, taking the objective, what's the objective of the trip, she must go and check. Did I also mention Canada? Only the U.S. Yes, I said she must check Brazil, Canada, no, not Canada, U.S. U.K., yes. Because I know when we started this committee, we were told that Canada and UK have got a strong committee like ours.
Mm-hmm.
So I said she must go and check the routes in terms of cost, which one is equivalent to, and where the same objective could be fulfilled of the trip. It was Brazil, through the dot, to the point in terms of rent and pay, and also that would enable us to fulfill the objectives of the trip. And then I said she must do a preliminary engagement. A week ago, or more than a week ago, I got the first email that was a correspondence between her and, was it our High Commission, or was it Foreign Affairs?
High Commission.
Our own. Yes. Our High Commission in Brazil, South African High Commission.
When are we going?
I've
been studying the way Brazil do it.
So, it's promising. Do you have any further report apart from the last minute?
Okay. You
must push for that because our only week is the first week of October, which is tomorrow. Otherwise, it's early this day, and I don't want to postpone this move any further because cost is escalating. I also have an appointment with the powers that be in terms of our budget, because we need to take one or two people additionally on the Brazilian trip. Because when Mrs. Rush Valley could not go, we replaced her with Mrs. Mass. Now she's demanding her right to go. So this is a problem. So I said, maybe instead of just her, we can take an additional person also. So I've had tentative discussions with Mrs. Kempa and Mr. Deutsch for that reason. They said I must meet them when we come from Bizana, but they know what the issues are. In the meantime, Mrs. Kempa has tasked somebody to look into our budget to facilitate those two additional people who could go with us. I hope you find this. Are you endorsing this?
Yes.
Thank you. Enjoy the weekend. We'll meet in Bizana, those who are going.
He's very lucky.
Members should give the copies of their passports to the committee secretary. All members. Because at any given time, you can be requested to, you know, not promising anything, but
when
you
promise.
Yes.
First
speaker
I can make.
Okay. All right.
First speaker I can make.
Sure, no, you can. There is a possibility that next week I'm going to ask somebody to replace me because the European Union have invited me to a European Union Parliament. So I would rather give my space to somebody else.
No, but if you don't vote for myself, I'm not going to vote. Walk alone on the Copacabana.
Goodbye, thanks.
Thanks, have a nice weekend.
Is this yours, no? Okay, I'll take this, okay. Oh, yeah, I'll take this.
Thank you. No,
I just wanted
Did you say last building? After 10. Got your cab. After 10.
You said it's from the city.